Good morning and welcome back to Nach Yoimi. Today we are going to be covering the 19th chapter of Sefer Shoftim. I have to add as a warning to the next three and last chapters of Sefer Shoftim. This is among the darkest areas in Tanakh, and there is very little silver lining to it. So as we enter into this can be a very dark and depressing section in Tanakh, but it is necessary to learn because obviously there are many lessons for which we need to take into account. So the story goes, it starts off as a simple story. Sounds like, you know, if you were to think about the backdrop of this, you know, you'd think of fields and the wind and sunlight and pleasant classical music playing in the background, and that's how the story starts, but it gets much darker as we go along. So there was a fellow from Ish Levi, another Ish Levi, who's a person from the tribe of Levi, who comes from the Har Ephraim, from the mountains of Ephraim. So it sounds similar to other fellow we met beforehand. Well, it seems to be a different story and different person. And he has a Pilegesh. A Pilegesh is a woman who has a level of marriage, but not the same level of marriage as with a Ksuba. That means to say that there's a less commitment between them in marriage, but there is certainly a level of commitment. There's infidelity. It sounds like that Vatizneh Lo Pilegesh, that something happens in the relationship on her side, and she leaves to her father's house, and she's there for 4 months. So it sounds like, at this point in time, something's happened between the two of them. There's not good blood. The marriage, they're separated at this point. So, but he decides he really wants to reunite. So he goes over, he takes a gift for her, a tzemed kachamorim, a group of donkeys as a gift, and he goes to her father's house, and everything's good. He speaks to her, she speaks to him. Everything works out, and they have a 3-day feast where they celebrate their reunion. And everything seems to be fine. On the 4th day, they're ready to go. He wants to take his Pilegesh back to his house. And they start getting ready to go, but the father of the bride of the Pilegesh says, "Don't go, please, you know." Has a feast, they have a nice, you know, lunch, and they drink, they eat, and it, by the time it gets there, he wants to go, it's really late, and the man says, "Oh, don't go now," and they decide that they're not going to go. So it comes the 5th day, same thing happens, they're about to get in the morning, he says, "Let's have a little feast," and they have a feast. The son-in-law now does not drink. The previous day he seemed to have drank, and that's sort of what pulled him back. Now it's coming towards the end of the day, and the father-in-law is saying, "Please, please, please, just stay." And the son-in-law says, no, we really need to go. You know, it's been 5 days already at the in-laws. It's time to move out." So they start going, and they start leaving, and it's already towards the end of the day. Ironically, unfortunately, Eli Baruch Shulman, when commenting on this, points out that the irony is that as much as he's trying to help and protect his daughter and his son-in-law, his trying to make them stay actually sets them up for terrible danger. So there's a terrible irony in what's going on over here. Anyway, they get up to go, and they start on their way, and they leave. And as they're going, they're moving towards Har Ephraim. They have to pass through the territory of Binyamin, and they pass by Yevus, which is actually the Jebusites, which is a Canaanite nation. And they said, "Well, we're not going to stay here because it's getting dark, but we don't want to stay here because it's not a Jewish nation, a Jewish town." And they decide they're going to stay in a place called Giva, which belongs to Binyamin. Ironically speaking, Rabbi Angel points out when commenting on this, that, you know, ironically, they're looking for the moral upstanding people. They enter into the lion's den when, we don't know what would have happened in Yevus, but, ironically speaking, again, Yevus could have been safer than walking into Giva in Binyamin. Anyways, they go to Binyamin. Nobody's inviting them into the house. So what happens is they're looking around. They meet this elderly person on the streets. And the man says, "Where are you coming from? Where are you going?" And they say, "Look, we're not getting any invitations." So the man, the Tanakh emphasizes that this man is actually not from Binyamin. He's not from Giva at all. He's from Har Ephraim. It's almost like the only outsider in town is the one who's going to take in the strangers. And he says, "Oh, you know what? Why don't you come to my house?" He says, just don't stay in the street." And you can really hear there's something ominous about this, that this is not the kind of place you want to spend the night at. Okay, so he brings them into his house. He starts bringing out food for them and for the donkeys. He starts setting up the sleeping quarters. And in the meantime, as they're starting to get to the meal, they hear a knock at the door, and a number of people from the town, doesn't say all, but like Sodom, but many, many people in the town of Anshe B'li'ail surround the house, and they say, "Bring out the man." that you brought over here, and we're going to, it sounds like they want to rape this man. So the man walks out the house, he says, please, my brothers, don't, you know, this is my guest, don't do this. And they carry on forcing their way in, and he says, you know what, I'll give you my daughter and the Pilegesh instead of trying to take this man out. And they don't listen, they start getting violent. And in the meantime, the son-in-law, this Ishlevi, this unnamed man, takes his Pilegesh and shoves her out of the door, and she is gang-raped all night. To the point that in the next morning, she crawls to the entrance and puts her hand on the lintel, on the doorstep, and she's silent. But when the next morning, they open up the door, and the man says, no, come, let's go, and she doesn't answer. Clearly, she died. And he picks her up, takes her on the donkey, he brings her back to his home city, and he takes a knife and slices her into 12 parts, and sends each part to one of the 12 tribes of Israel, and says, as a message to all the tribes to come together, and everybody is shocked out of their wits, as we are by even just hearing the story, and they said, we need to do something about this, and this is the end of the parak. It's such a shocking story. It's such a terrible story, and unfortunately, it's only going to get worse. So there's a number of things just to think about over here when looking at this parak. Some very sad things to consider. Number one is that there's this sort of symbolism of, you know, the people outside of the giver and the people in the giver. You know, even the older man doesn't live in the giver. This older man is a stranger, and he is the exception to the rule, that he's moving from the field where he finds them to the city, to the urban city, and ironically the city, which is supposed to be the place of greater civilization, is a place of lesser civilization, which is, and he had all the excuses in the world. He was elderly, he would just come back from work, he's not a resident, but he was the one who took them in. This is an indictment on the Tis city at the time. Now, question, how could he offer his daughter? What was he doing? Like this is like reminds us of the Lot situation with his daughters. How can he possibly offer his daughters? So the Radak says that, you know, they understood that what the men of the town wanted to do is they really wanted to kill the visitor, the Ishlevi. And he felt that maybe if he could offer his daughter, Rachmana Litzlan, to these people to satiate their desires, he would save this man from being killed. That was the cheshbon that he had, the crooked cheshbon or the difficult cheshbon that he had to have. However, just to be clear, the Midrash Tanhuma points this out, and I've seen that people actually comment on this, and there's like a moral sliding scale here that people sometimes apply, and they say, you know, in those times it was easier to throw out, you know, a girl to the mob. The Tanhuma says very, very clear, and just to read this, just so everybody's clear, on the same page. A normal person, puts themselves in front of the train before allowing their wife or daughter to be killed. And this man throws out his own daughter for this. By Lot, that you're going to keep him for yourselves, meaning there's going to be terrible tragedy that's going to come out of your daughter's lot. So just to clarify, things didn't change. This was something he should have been very careful about, should have been very clear about to protect his own daughters. Meaning to say, this is an indictment. There was no silver lining in what he did over here. Why was he surprised she was dead the next morning? So Dat Mikra said that maybe he thought that they were just going to rape her. He didn't realize how severe it was going to be. But nonetheless, you see a terrible insensitivity in this man himself. He wasn't even looking out the window. Sounds like he had got a good night's sleep. The whole thing is shocking. The next morning, suddenly he's surprised that she's no longer alive. Why did he cut her up? So the Malbim says that symbolically what he was trying to say was all of Israel is operating in such separate units. All the tribes are so different. There's no federal law over here. There's no protection for travelers in different tribes. This has reached the point of destruction. We need now, he's calling foul on the fact that there's such disassociation among the tribes. Ironically, just as we see something very interesting, is that he pretends that he's all very, very concerned now, and he was so wronged, and his Pilegesh was hurt, but he didn't seem so worried about shoving her out the door last night and sleeping the night and checking in on her in the morning. So there's a big irony as to, like, you know, his level of concern, how much is it really matters to him. The last thing just to focus on over here is that we're told already, as we saw, that there was something infidelity in this relationship. The Chazal debate, was it real? Was it adultery? Was there something else going on in the relationship? That also impacts the relationship he has with her as well. There's baggage to this relationship which carries in over here. What we're going to see now over here is with this terrible moral precipice that we've really fallen over when this kind of thing is happening. Now we're going to see is how does Israel react to this, and do they react appropriately or too much? In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.